Hello and welcome to the Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Season 1, Episode 7 of Scream Queens, entitled Beware of Young Girls.
I should be aware of you, Olga. Do you consider yourself a young girl?
Come now. I am an old soul. I go to bed. No, that's a lie. I don't go to bed at 6 p.m. I do eat dinner very early.
You do go to bed at 6 a.m.?
That's when I take my medication.
All right. Enough of this comedy stuff. Spoiler warning for Scream Queens, Episode 7. Also, I don't know if you noticed if you saw the promo for next week. It said 5 weeks left.
I did.
So I assume that means that we have a two-hour finale because there should be 6 weeks left.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
The two-hour finales always make me wary.
Hmm.
Because then the penultimate episode is rarely interesting.
I can see that, sure. Depends on I think you're probably right. In recent memory, I remember a couple of positive ones, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We have 5 weeks left. I feel like it's going to be over before we know it, and it doesn't even feel like we've been walking very long, but it's interesting.
You're right about that. I definitely agree. It just kind of flew by.
Yeah.
And even though I really missed it during the break, so now I feel kind of sad that we have
so
little left. Because
so does that mean that there isn't a break? Does that mean we're just going until the end of until December and then it's over? Or is there going to be I guess I don't know what 5 weeks left. I would assume 5 weeks means five consecutive weeks, but maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Let us know if you're out there in the Twitterverse. Because I know IMDb, I think, had some of the episodes coming out next year, but that would seem kind of strange to me for them to have a break
annoying.
With, like,
I would just be annoyed by that, because if they just save the last two episodes, then maybe that would bode well for the penultimate episode then.
Mm.
But I just don't really want to wait that long. Because then I don't know, my memory's kind of bad with things.
I don't think it's good for the ratings of the show.
I was about to say, if it's already not doing the best. Do you know
what the ratings? I actually haven't checked, I forgot, yeah.
I can look it up real quick.
All right. Well,
I'll be the responsible parent.
While she does that, I'm going to talk a little bit about Beware of Young Girls and how it was an interesting episode. I'm actually very interested to see how you reacted to it, because it was, some people were calling it filler. Filler is such a funny word to me, because it's like, especially on a show like this, which isn't the goal of it to create comedy and crazy moments, and it succeeded in those, and I don't know, you know, and there were character development, so I don't know that I'd call it filler, but I guess I get where people are coming from as far as not that much has moved forward necessarily beyond just knowing more about Dean Munch.
That's true, but you know what? I think the episode was useful,
mm-hmm.
like you said, in terms of comedy, and I think that it helped with the pacing.
Yeah.
If anything, I actually appreciated having having less moments focusing on the whodunit aspect.
Now that's interesting, because last week your biggest complaint was that it was not enough happened. There wasn't enough forward momentum.
That's because it was promising a different thing. Mm. What this episode promised us, it fulfilled. I would argue.
Okay, I guess I can see that.
And another thing. We were...
Well, by the episode, do you mean the promo?
I actually don't remember the promo.
No, but I guess I don't know what you mean by it. The episode promised us something.
Once the episode's set up, once we know what the Chanels are going to be dealing with, it fulfills what the Chanels deal with.
Yeah.
It gives us just enough... I would say it gave us more of, like... Last week we were complaining about how we didn't know what Gigi was doing.
Yeah.
And Gigi's role, there we go. We have forward momentum, I would say, on what Gigi's doing.
Yeah. Minimum,
but it was enough for me this time around, because if it was going too fast, then we wouldn't have enough time for five more episodes or whatever. And in terms of Pete and Grace, we were like, where's Pete? What about their relationship? This episode gave us time to see their relationship again. Yeah. And that was great. And when it introduced us to it again went back. I would say that we had already moved past Dean Munch as a suspect.
Yeah.
But I don't think, from what I've read, not everybody did.
Yeah.
Not everybody had moved past her as a suspect, as a Red Devil.
Mm.
And
which I don't blame them, given the number of Red Devils involved here and right. her connection to the past and everything.
Yeah, I still could have seen her as, like, a different Red Devil.
Mm.
You know, someone doing it on their own. And now this time she... And she kind of did do it on her own, not as a Red Devil, but still, it fulfilled her storyline.
Yeah.
It was great. I honestly, I have really no complaints about it. And
really? The whole episode?
I mean, I might come up with some as we get in the specifics, but...
I'm very surprised, I have to be honest.
I really like this episode, actually.
I thought this was a major episode of style over substance.
Oh, no, it was definitely that, but that didn't change my enjoyment of it.
But I guess more so than ever, it felt like I was just watching, like... crazy wacky thing, like vignettes of wackiness, which were enjoyable, but were just kind of like, this isn't in any way grounded in the way that I might need it to be grounded to, I don't know, feel anything or connect with any, like it's we can get into this more as we go for his particular people, but like little vignettes of, like, the goat incident are funny, but are just like a crazy skit. And Dean Munch likes being in an asylum. And kind of funny, but just zany. Or like Feather, you know, sees an arrow on the ground and follows it. And
there definitely was a lot of that. I would agree that it was definitely ridiculous a lot of the time.
This show is.
But I didn't really mind it.
Mm.
Again, I didn't mind it because somehow, maybe it was the direction.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was directed by Barbara Brown, written by Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
I definitely see the Ryan Murphy coming through in the writing.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially, I'd say that he definitely does lean towards the vignette kind of writing.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's so quippy. This episode was crazy quippy.
Yeah.
Of course, mostly with Chanel. Mm-hmm. But still had a lot of those kinds of one-liners.
Yeah, it is funny because as much as I'm saying it's style over substance, I actually do agree that it was probably better for the characters than usual. Like, I think that generally I liked Chanel more than usual, and that Grace had more positive moments than she has, and that I felt like Dean Munch had been pretty flat, and I really enjoyed her stuff in this episode. So I do think that, and I thought Gigi was phenomenal. Like, this is my favorite episode for Gigi, actually.
Mine too.
And so I definitely think there are a lot of great moments. It was just a lot of also, like... this is very weird.
It was weird. I don't disagree. It was definitely weird. It was definitely weird. And there was a lot of homage in it, and I will get to that.
Yeah.
Another thing, I went and I looked it up, and it had a 2.44 million.
2.4 million is pretty bad. I mean, I don't know what else the current stuff on Fox is doing right now, but this is probably an expensive show. I'm not so sure about the future of it. We'll see. But that's like CW Disney Channel territory. That is not Fox, what Fox should be doing with their big new show, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of sad for them. So in the previous week, it had 2.6 million viewers.
Mm.
The week before that, Pumpkin Patch, it had 2.4 as well. Yeah. The Haunted House had 3. So it keeps bouncing between like... almost 2.5 and 3.
Well, it seems at least consistent lately, which is, I think, a positive thing. I am interested if anybody has any knowledge about, like, the other Fox shows and what they've renewed in the past and, like, what their standard is now. Because I know what their standard used to be, which was very high when it was...
every channel's standards have fallen. The biggest shows on TV, you know, there are so many channels, there are so many options. They're not taking into consideration DVR statistics because they can't, because it's about commercials, and when people DVR it, they don't watch the commercials, or they have ad block on their computers and things like that. So
I wonder what the fact that Hulu can now, you can now pay for Hulu without commercials, how that changes things for people looking also at, like, oh, if they're watching it on Hulu, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so cinematic techniques. I didn't put down everything because, you know, we've had a lot of repeats and stuff, but a few things I wanted to talk about. So there was some stuff during Gigi's phone call. He was talking and it sort of swerved into a canted angle. As I've talked about before, canted angles went sort of diagonal. They use a lot of that in horror movies. It's also called duck angle. They do a lot of different things with canted angles, especially also like when we were in the asylum later. And we were sort of swiveling in and out of canted angles and gliding throughout the space and like moving towards in on things. It was very interesting stuff they were doing this week. We also had a nice slow zoom in at the head and the fish tank during the feather part of it.
Do you think that was an homage to A Fish Called Wanda, which had Jamie Lee Curtis in it?
I have not seen A Fish Called Wanda.
Boo.
Boo.
I'd like to believe. That's what it was.
Very possible. One shot I wanted to talk to you about and see what you thought, because I didn't even know really what to call it or what to make of the shot, was when they were buying clothes, Grace and Gigi, right? Mm-hmm. And there was that cut to that shot, which was sort of like maybe from like a Red Devils point of view or something, but it was sort of like farther back and like there were like the mirrors were everywhere, and it was, do you know what I'm talking about? I didn't really even know what was happening there. It was more like, it was like walking them from afar.
I don't remember that.
I didn't know what that was about, or if I was just seeing it weirdly, or what, but it seemed like it was only walking them from inside one of the other closet, like one of the other
dressing rooms.
I don't know.
I vaguely remember that shot. I remember. It like kind of looks at them from the back / like side a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I was also kind of confused because there were so many mirrors everywhere that I was having trouble understanding what I was looking at.
Okay.
So,
I don't remember feeling
that
confused in that scene, or at least like, oh, this is an interesting shot.
It was a particularly strange thing they did, so I don't know. Maybe if you want to look back at it, or maybe, I mean, I am visually impaired, so maybe I just wasn't getting it, but it seemed like it was supposed to be putting us in somebody else's headspace walking them. That's how I took it.
I wonder what that could mean, like what they're trying to say with that about Gigi.
Well, that's the thing, is I was like almost wondering if one of the people that he was on the phone with was walking Gigi at the time. Because I'm pretty sure there was a musical cue in connection with it. I have to go back and look at it, but I'm almost wondering if we should pause right now and you should go look at this.
We'll be right back. Okay, so I went back and I watched this scene, and I actually think, so what happens is, as soon as this shot, it kind of is from farther away and behind a pillar. So you kind of, you're looking at Gigi as she's looking at a rack, but there's that like mirror that's reflecting, and then there's another mirror and a pillar.
Yeah.
And it focuses on Gigi. So the blurry thing, I'm not a film student, passes behind that. It's out of focus. And
it's you're talking about the foreground and the...
Foreground. Yeah. I knew those words. Didn't think to put them together that way. So yeah, the foreground is out of focus and you're focusing in on Gigi. And then this ominous music starts playing right as it does this. And it starts when Gigi is talking about like, so you and Pete have been investigating.
Yeah.
I think it was just to signal like now it's Gigi moving from being so sweet and nice and motherly or like... Best friends, kind of like, let's get along because we want to make your dad happy, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
To being like, and now it's time for my real motivation. Yeah. Like, I am not as nice as I seem.
Yeah, and I rewatched it when you were rewatching it, and yeah, I don't think it's quite someone's walking them, but I do definitely think it's an artful, interesting, stylish shot to choose to do.
Yeah.
And that you could be very much right about it signifying that change of tone. And,
yeah, that's how I read it. I kind of like that more
than
the
idea
of
someone
watching.
Yeah, no, that's definitely cool. Do you want to make in this last shot?
Yeah, I absolutely loved this last shot as the song Beware of Young Girls, which is the name of the episode, is playing. And I'm actually going to get back to the meaningful nature of this song.
Yeah.
And as that's playing, Zayday, I like that shot of Zayday and Grace walking in, and it's kind of like a diagonal, like, aerial shot, and then the camera, like, pans over to the silhouette of the Chanels standing at the railing.
Yeah, very and cool lighting for one
so
thing.
Cool. And it was it was like kind of ominous, and it was like a promise of
well, because then it also turned, actually showed them after, panned up over to them after.
Yeah. So, but I especially was like, wow, with the silhouette portion of it. Because if
I almost think they should have just stopped at the silhouette.
I do too. Yeah. That would have been way more memorable. But I'm just, what I mean to say is I'm glad that they didn't just go straight to them either.
Yeah.
That they took their time with it. It was cool.
Yeah. Very cool lighting. Very, very cool shot.
Yes.
All right. Let's go in. So I guess before we get into the characters, which we are going by character for some reason, I made a bad error in judgment deciding to go by characters this week. I apologize. Probably should have gone scene by scene. But we should just mention no Denise again. Basically no Zayday. Basically no Wes. And no Jennifer or Earl Grey, which was an interesting choice.
We see Earl Grey, but he doesn't say anything.
Yeah. I'm not gonna count that, really.
No, but I just, yeah.
It's also interesting that now, without Sam around, it's the Chanels, and then Grace and Zayday, and then, Jennifer just off on her own.
In the house, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Alright, so...
Do you think that means that she's gonna die?
Probably. I'd be pretty surprised if Jennifer... What if Jennifer ends up being, really important and we just, totally overlooked her?
What if Jennifer ends up as one of the killers?
I don't think so.
I mean...
I think she'll just die next.
I don't think so, but maybe.
No, I refuse to accept it.
Why not? We wouldn't have seen it coming.
Do you have any issue with no Denise, no Zayday?
Zayday... It's such a big cast, and they've already, pushed so many characters aside.
Yeah.
That they can't focus on everybody, and now that the cast is getting smaller, they can. Mm. But even
well,
so,
we
it's
could
harder.
Also say Chad had a much more minor role than he has.
Yeah,
this
Chad was only
also.
In, a scene other than the funeral scene.
Yeah.
So I'm glad there was no Denise.
Mm.
We see that she'll be in the next one if you watch the promo.
Yeah.
Which is good, because it's, three episodes without Denise would make no sense. But two is fine. And Zayday, where would Zayday have fit in this episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like we said, we needed more time with Grace. We needed more time with Dean Monk. And, the Chanel time was solid.
Yeah.
Because I would even say that 5 and 3, yes, they were around a lot, but they didn't really have a ton.
No. They were sidekicks.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, they were more like, and the premiere, what I didn't even remember who was who and who said what,
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into
Chanel, yeah. So let's talk about the funeral. I wasn't a big fan of this opening. What did you think?
I thought that it was really wacky. Mm-hmm. But it was necessary for them... to have an episode, another Ariana Grande episode.
Yeah.
To fulfill the need of justifying her in so much marketing beyond her just being killed off in the first episode. So without the funeral scene, there would have been nothing set up for the Chanels to do this episode.
Yeah,
because it was all about them being the Chanels.
Yeah, well, I'm not upset that there was a funeral scene. I'm upset that I think it was not well done.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember Heather's. I haven't seen Heather's in a while.
Me neither.
Obviously, there's a clear Heather's homage in general with the Chanels being the Heather's, and they all the same name kind of thing, but. I wasn't sure. I think that the whole thing of going up to the casket and thinking something sort of selfish or, millennial-ish at the time. And Heather,
porking
it wasn't...
is not a millennial word, though.
Yeah. But I think that I'm pretty sure that's an homage. But if I'm wrong, let me know. I'm sure you will. And
Me. The listener. Feel free to correct Dan whenever you like.
But, I didn't think that was bad. I liked the Chad speed thing. I was surprised Chad didn't say, when he went up, that he didn't say that think that he looked hot while dead.
Right?
Given his thing
is
for dead
no
bodies.
Into that? Does he no longer masturbate on graves?
That's true. I don't think he's mentioned it since seeing all the bodies
in
the haunted house.
Right, and he broke things off with Hester.
Yeah. That's a good point. Interesting. Character development.
Aw, Chad's over his fetish and has a new one, maybe.
But I guess the main part that I just didn't like was the eulogy. It just, I'm just over this shrill, crazy monologuing. I mean, and she had other good moments throughout this episode, I think, but that particular, the eulogy just really did nothing for me.
I think we need to get over this because it's clearly a part of her. And I don't like it either, believe me. I don't like it either, but I think they've set it up as, like, this shrill, like, whininess is, like, part of who she is. Because they have it every episode, and every episode we're like, but we don't like this, and then everything else with her is fine, except the shrill whininess.
Yeah, I guess we could say it's something to get over, or we could say it's a core flaw with the show, in my opinion. To me, it's the type of thing where I feel like if I could show the show that I generally would show to a friend and think they would like it, and they could see the scene and be like, why the hell do you watch this show? This is terrible. Like, I literally think that eulogy was terrible. Like,
yeah. So I think it's representative of her.
I think that she's better. She has moments that are better than that. So
would she be as dislikable without this aspect to her character?
I don't think she's exactly likable when she's calling everybody hookers and sluts and everything.
Right, but
that's
not a different kind of, like, cattiness.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I think that the shrill screaming side is like poor little rich girl.
Yeah,
part of who she is.
It's also, I just feel like it goes on too long. It was like the same joke I've seen before, mm-hmm. gone on too long, performed the same way. You know,
okay,
it's just
that's another aspect entirely that I can't get on board with, that they do it too much or that it goes on too long and now it's just like beating a dead horse. So yeah, that I can agree with you.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like it's not something I need to get over. If anything, it's something that's getting more annoying each time they do it.
Okay.
But I did like the whole jab at the Ouija movie. Ouija. Ever saw it. Sorry.
Also, feel free to criticize Dan on his pronunciation of things. Well, Hester makes a face.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. I also wrote that I think the phrase from beyond the grave was said, like, six times this episode, something like that, between the Chanels, including the dead Chanel. I just kept saying it, and
I didn't clue into that.
I did not notice it the first time I watched it, and then I watched it the second time, I'm like, they're saying this a lot.
Well, what other things can you say? And it's a really melodramatic sentence.
From beyond the grave. I thought it was funny.
I really liked the Ouija board scenes.
Well, so I was going to ask you, I guess there's like multiple parts to this. A, do you think that there's actually anything supernatural happening?
So I was actually going to ask you the same question, but I was going to ask it in regards to the asylum scene with the painting.
Oh, really? Why?
Because I'm like, Pete and Grace have been here for like less than five minutes.
That's a surrealist, in my opinion.
Well, maybe, but in conjunction with the Ouija board stuff, I was like, oh, is that, are we actually supposed to believe that?
Nah, I think that's more like Denise can magically teleport around the room and be there really quick.
I think that's just bad editing, not surrealism.
Not bad, surrealist, the same way I think that this whole painting thing is surreal. I mean, they make a joke about it, like, oh, they made it so quickly. I think you're overthinking the painting thing, but
I was just wondering.
But, yeah.
But yeah, I just mean to say that there might be now a supernatural aspect of it, but it was just so ridiculous.
The Ouija thing I want to talk about, because to me, for most of the episode, I was like, they're faking us out. And I still think they could be, and be explaining it a couple weeks from now, that it was all a trick of Hester's doing to get everybody on board with murdering Chanel. And that's why she asked the 9 tampons thing, and then later on she goes, well, they were right about the tampons thing, and then she's the one who suggests we have to kill Chanel. So I definitely thought, and then the fact that, you know, it's Dream, you know, later, it's not really necessarily Chanel number two coming back from the dead.
I don't think it is.
At the same time, he gives Chanel knowledge that Chanel should not have, and then Chanel has that knowledge as far as they're going to try to kill you. And so
I think that Chanel is, she could have figured that out, like, subconsciously. Besides, she already doesn't trust Hester. I think she's accused them of this kind of thing in the past, too. Or at least of, like, setting her up and everything.
Yeah.
So, I saw it as, like, subconscious processing. Besides, number two in her dream says, like, right now they're buying a bowling ball, like, to squash your head. And then when she asked them, like, what were you going to do? It was going to be rat poison.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean much to me, though, because they changed their mind about what they were going to do so many times.
Potentially, but I think that's enough for me to believe that there is no Hitler motorboating number two in hell.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'd also say is, how much would that bother you if that was supposed to be canon?
It would be hard for them to bring the... You mean, like... bring this up a second time?
I'm not saying bring it up a second time, but to me, if they never reveal that Hester was planning this or, you know, on purpose to trick everyone, then you are supposed to take it as real.
I don't know. I think I'd be okay with it just being, like, that being the surrealist aspect of the show.
Like, so the weird side thing, yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't ruin things for me, but until I see otherwise, I'm gonna believe that it was Hester.
Yeah. Well, what did you think generally about the Chanel number two scene? Did you like that interaction about Hal and everything?
It was funny.
Mm.
It definitely, I kind of, like, giggled a couple times, and it was weird. Definitely weird.
I really liked the dinosaurs thing.
Right?
That really worked for me.
Jesus broke in and stole them.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, like, the visual of that is incredible.
It was just so random. I definitely enjoyed that. I actually think that they both had good delivery in that scene.
I don't like Ariana Grande's acting, so
Really? I actually thought her delivery was pretty funny.
I mean, it's good for, like, the vapid person that they're trying to set up and how she's different from the other, you know, giving her more of a unique voice.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. Like, I can appreciate it, but I don't like it.
No, I thought he was really funny. I thought he had a lot of good delivery there. I have no previous knowledge of her acting ability or any sort or anything, honestly, anything at all about Ariana Grande, so I'm not going into any with any feelings about it. I just thought that she had good lines and delivered them well.
Fair enough.
But, so I actually have a question. I'm worried this is going to make me sound really stupid, but I wasn't sure who was right about the rat poison. I assume that Chanel was right that you would vomit it up, but I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be a joke of Chanel stupid and thinks she's smart, or if it was actually she was right.
So, are you asking me if I've ever tried to poison someone?
No. Well, because he specifically said that the difference is that rats don't have a gag reflex.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the whole point of the scene was to make her reestablish leadership over the Chanels and show how smart she is. So even if that's not true, I'm going to take it at face value.
Yeah.
And accept that she's like, you guys are so stupid, you can't accomplish something as simple as killing one person, you need me.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm fine with that.
I actually really liked that it would make me skinnier thing. Yeah, with the edits in line with her character. Yeah, I thought that was actually really funny. And aside from the eulogy, I actually really enjoyed Emma Roberts in this episode. And I thought she had some good delivery and some good, you know, facial reactions and things throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like that she's sort of reasserting herself as, like, I'm going to take charge. And I do wonder, though, so... Should the fact that they were so bumbling with going after her, could that in any way change our feelings about any of them being Red Devils, or...
I mean, I don't believe any of them are Red Devils.
Oh, okay, you don't.
No. Oh, I mean, jury's still out on number five, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of like, I don't know about five,
but... I mean, again, that doesn't mean that They ignored her ideas of how to kill.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just this thing of her being like, I'm going to take my time and take all these bitches down. Mm. So I'm okay with her potentially being a killer and making herself play the fool.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed the whole interaction about the sugar party and her sort of being the rational one and everybody else being like, what are you talking about?
They do that all the time, though, where where they make her have things that are totally valid statements and then totally undermine them at the same time. Like when she's still upset over Dodger dying and then people are like, get over, and she's like, no, it makes sense for her to still be upset about this.
Or he was right about the kidney thing. I forget exactly what the specifics were, but,
like, my parents didn't sell my kidneys and they didn't sell Gary Coleman's either. It's great. It's the character setup. I still, once again, another week goes by where Abigail Breslin does not have anything to do. We'll see.
And instead they just talk about her vagina, teeth. And I
do like that joke. I like.
Do you
that
think
joke.
There's you? Wait, you like that joke?
Now I do. I think they've beaten me into submission with liking that
How
joke.
How did they make that? You hated it last week.
I know. I don't but last week wasn't the first time that they had it, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was that Truth or Dare.
Okay, well, I think what I liked about it was because they referenced it again.
Okay.
So it's the thing of Okay, I know, this doesn't make sense, but it comes back to me respecting the writers. Like, they set it up as Chanel beating down number five and saying, like, all these really critical, stupid things about her. It's kind of like the rule of threes. Like, the first time, you're like, you don't know what to make of this. The second time, you might not find a finding. By the third time, it's hilarious.
See, now, I think it is... You take a bad joke, and then you repeat it repeatedly, and it's more bad each time you do it, much like the cotton ball thing and getting more duck sauce.
Yeah, I didn't like that joke. Yes. But I really hated it the first time. I was like, okay, and then when they kept coming back to it. So I basically don't really like anything of that regard.
Yeah, I'm actually wondering if the vagina teeth will pay off in some way.
Maybe, but maybe I'm mostly what I like about it is number five's reaction to hearing it again.
Yeah,
like, this exasperated, like, why me?
She was funny about it. Yeah. And then I also thought Emma Roberts was really funny in that she's like, I like this thing. That, like,
It wasn't so much the joke itself so much as the reactions to the joke.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I do agree that it was like they were having fun with it. Mm-hmm. I just, that particular joke, it just does nothing for me, but...
Okay, that's fine. So, wait, you said that you really liked Chanel's reactions to things. Does that include her reaction to Chad? I thought you would actually really hate that, where, again, she goes into whiny, desperate mode.
Yeah, but it wasn't really her going into... Like, yes, she was being whiny, but she actually was going to break up with him until he told her, until he told her what happened. Okay. So, I don't... actually really have an issue, like, I can see where, like, yes, she is being sort of shrill again, but it wasn't as annoying as other things.
Right, no, it didn't bother me either because of that reason, where she's like, no, I'm not taking this again. And even though I hate every episode hearing her go, oh, Chad, like, I could go without hearing that ever again. Yeah. But again, I think that's just part of her character, so have to accept it. And of course, even though Chad's barely in this episode, it was brilliant when he was.
Yeah. So this whole goat thing is insane. Oh my god.
First of all, I did not know that goat's milk was lactose free.
I didn't either. The more you know.
So basically Scream Queens is an educational show.
Obviously.
It should be on PBS.
It did feel like one of the few satirical moments of the episode, as far as, I don't know if they were, they sort of just playing off, like, the very special message that, you know, like, we have to tell you about this important disability that 50% of people deal, you know?
Right.
Given how crazy this show is, for about 5 seconds, I legitimately believed he was having sex with a goat.
Me too.
Because, like, I wouldn't put it past the show for him to actually be having sex with a goat.
Well, at first I was like, oh, this goat is a therapy animal that he got when Boone died. Because he used to share a room with Boone.
Yeah.
But then, I was like, no, it's actually him having sex with it. Then I went back to thinking it was a therapy animal. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, out of nowhere, it's lactose intolerance.
Oh my god.
It was a wild ride, let's put it that way. Oh, much man. Like him and the goat.
I also really enjoyed the line of you can't let dead people get to you. They're super pissed off that they're dead and they're coming from a place of anger. That's what the exact line is. That's so good. Oh my god. His delivery is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh man.
If any character has been nailed to perfection on this show, it is Chad.
I wanted to go somewhere sexual with that, but I think he does the nailing.
See, if the animal had been a pig, like one of those teacup pigs, instead of the goat, then I would have been like, yeah, this is definitely like sex time.
So I mentioned Hester, but I want to go a little bit more into Hester, just in that it's still kind of strange to me, honestly, that Chanel hasn't had more of a reaction against Hester. Mm-hmm. Like, at least, yes, she, like, called her out and was like, I'm never going to trust you again. But isn't she the kind of person who would, like, destroy someone for this?
Right?
It just seems very weird that she's just, like, accepting her as still, like, at minimum, you would think he would strip her of her being a Chanel or, like, try to kick her out of Kappa. Like,
yeah.
It's very weird.
Instead, they're all going to, the four of them are going to go ahead and try and kill Zayday and Grace.
Yeah.
Which, in and of itself, is kind of trusting number six.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I also, as far as talking about people's facial expressions, I want to say, I think Lea Michele did a great job this episode.
Absolutely. When the sugar party thing,
yes.
Going back to that, where with crushing up the diamonds,
yeah,
and again, and then Chanel being like, oh, a sugar party, I love those, like, victory, like, I knew it.
Yes, no, that was honestly, that was the main moments I was thinking of, too. It was really well done.
I
really
went back
funny.
And watched that a second time. Yeah. I loved it so much. It was great.
Really funny. Anything else about Hester earmuffs or our five or...
Well, earmuffs again. Great one-liners.
Yeah.
After Chanel, she's the best.
Mm.
What was it? She says, like, no prison can hold her
yeah.
in regards to Chanel. That was great. One thing that did throw me off, but I guess there was no time for it, she didn't talk about Sam at all.
I'm not surprised at all, honestly.
I'm not either, but I thought it was kind of a little weird.
Yeah, I mean...
Like it would, yeah.
It's funny, because, like, on something like MTV Scream, I had much more of an issue with, like, oh, this is a somewhat grounded show, and someone died a few weeks ago. You could probably still be upset about it.
Right.
Whereas, instead of cracking jokes, whereas this show, it's like, I would honestly be more surprised if they maintained some level of grief with a character, you know?
But. Well, I think it would have messed with the pacing a little bit.
Yeah.
But even just, like, one line.
You're right. There could have been a way to, like, throw in some sort of one-liner, or when she wanted to contact the dead, want to...
Exactly. Like, exactly. Like, why not contact Sam to ask her who killed her?
Or, like, yeah, because, like, there could have easily been a line where she's like, I want to do that, and then Chanel's like, no, we're doing this, you know, like...
Yeah, and then just whatever. Yeah. And the fact, or maybe having said something at the funeral.
Chanel and Chad's wedding.
Oh, God. that's going to be a disaster.
Season 2 is just their honeymoon.
Oh, God. Anyway, at the funeral, if she had a line or said something about, like, I'm missing Sam's funeral for this, but she'd forgive me or something, like, kind of bitchy or... Not bitchy, you know, her way of being bitchy, like, callous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apathetic.
Yes, yes, because she has no feelings.
Shall we talk about the best character of the episode?
We already talked about Chad.
Oh, look at you. Gigi, come on, man. Gigi.
I know. I'm playing stupid.
No, Gigi, really great acting. This episode. What's her name again, the actress?
Nassim Pedrad.
Yeah, really great
job.
I love her. I love the sort of the switching back and forth between things. And the whole phone call was, you know, very fun scene. And
great style when they zoomed in on her chopping.
Yeah.
Like, it opens up, and I'm like, who is this? Yeah. Who's chopping? The Chanels don't cook.
Mm. So we get a few bits of new knowledge, or further knowledge, you know, sort of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Confirming things we assumed before. So the first thing is they're murderers hell-bent on revenge. It's all a big revenge scheme, and that the kidnapping was not part of the normal deal. The person she wanted the other Red Devil to take care of, as far as the he, you have to take care of him, was the person who kidnapped Zayday, who was another one of their partners.
Right. So basically, we can confirm that she was speaking on the phone. If there aren't three Red Devils,
yeah,
then she was probably most likely speaking on the phone with the one that she met with in person.
Oh, yeah. That's what it seems like. Because he said, like, why have you not dealt with him
exactly.
yet?
Yeah. Exactly. And she criticizes them for being inefficient at killing.
Yeah. Also, I'm wondering how much we should take into account the fact that she says, you guys are inefficient at killing.
I think that's a red herring.
You think that's a red herring?
Yep.
I think it's very possible. Yeah.
I think they use that wording specifically for us to think. And even if it turns out that there isn't a female Red Devil,
yeah,
then this is enough for me to be like, we can't trust 100% that there isn't one.
Yeah, no, especially because they were very careful with their wording when she's like, oh, you and they, and, you know, like, she never was using any sort of any gender-specific anything, so besides the guys. So I think you're right that could just be throwing us off.
So here's the thing. She's talking about the kidnapping of Zayday, and I've seen online a lot of people do suspect that Zayday is one of the Red Devils.
Yeah.
And I still can't really get over the fact that she was definitely kidnapped.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like after her kidnapping, even if they go ahead and capture her or whatever, that she wouldn't work with them anymore.
Yeah. Like, that's a good point. It just seemed like such a weird, fishy story when she told it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you that it's weird because you would assume, like, Gigi would be talking to Zayday, probably, if Zayday was one of the Red Devils and was captured by a different, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. But definitely there was a lot of things last episode that felt super, like, fishy to me with her, like, setting up the whole truth or dare thing and saying, you know.
And it's still fishy. I just don't know what it means. I can't decide yet.
Yeah. To me, it's like, there's gotta be some sort of reveal, because if Zayday is supposed to just be normal, well, I'm not very on board with her character if she's, like, convincing Grace to stay for BS reason, you know, like...
So, I really like the cooking scene, and then Wes just comes in, and... Oh, that was another thing! Gigi, when asked about who she was on the phone with, she says, oh, nothing, just family drama.
Ah, you're right. I didn't even catch that would be an actual
and
hint,
that was a huge red flag for me.
Yeah.
I was like, is she related to one of the Red Devils? Is she the older sister of...
Or does she consider her the mother of one of them if she took care of the baby, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that. Yeah. But... Absolutely. I definitely think that was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
As a line.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm trying to remember. So we know that the baby's a girl, right?
Right.
Okay. Just trying to confirm that. But
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Grace was still worried that she could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about, like, one of the last things she says on the phone call is, you know, I have to come up with an overly elaborate plan to throw people off the scent, which, A, I kind of like the sort of maybe meta-ish humor there, sort of making fun of the over-elaborateness of planning or whatever. But I also think it's interesting because throughout most of the episode, I was like, wow, she really did do a great plan of, like, framing people and blah, blah, blah. But,
yeah, and then going after the dean's ex-husband.
Yeah, but it ended up being that it was literally just saying, like, look at the dean, and it happened to coincidentally time out perfectly. It seems like, right?
Yeah. That's what I mean. It was just, like, brilliant writing where we couldn't understand what was happening until the very end.
See, now, I don't know if I agree with you. I guess you're right that it was smart as far as it throws us off the scent, but it also just seems, like, weirdly, I don't know, like, it's trying to make you forget about the fact. Like, I don't know. It seems strange to me that she just happened to be coincidentally so successful there, like, because what was Gigi's real plan, just to, like, have them think, oh, maybe it's the dean, and then, like, that's not
no
that.
I don't think Gigi was involved in I think Gigi's overly elaborate thing is going to be more of something else.
I think we definitely saw Gigi's thing, because Gigi sent them after Feather and said, well, ask her what she thinks about the dean, like, I think it was very clearly that he was aiming them towards
then,
the dean.
But then there's... I just think that there's going to be more to her overly elaborate plan. I don't think she's done yet.
All right. I mean, I guess I don't know, but I really do think that that was what her plan was. But, do you have anything else you want to say about the clothing scene, Grace and her interacting and getting the different clothes? And
I really liked her lines about the clothes themselves and how they'll be back in style.
Yeah,
That was funny because it was true, because the stuff we wear now is very much inspired by vintage.
Yeah.
And I liked what she said about Wes. Like, he doesn't make it weird that he hasn't dated anyone in 18 years.
Yeah. And the almost creepy way that he is protective of you.
I really like that. So, yeah. You're right. She really is probably the best character in this episode.
And Gris, phenomenal acting, I think. It was just such a different tone between the two different scenes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wasn't even on the show that long, and he had such an impact, you know. So I'm really glad that we know that he's involved and that, you know, that he is involved, you know, like.
Yeah. I missed her last week.
All right. So moving on to Grace and Pete, who actually had some substantial stuff this week, which was nice. What do you think about them?
Well, Pace, as I like to call them. It's my portmanteau shipping name. Is it? Okay. Is it? I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
We'll see if Pace makes a comeback. I was really glad to see so much episode time dedicated to seeing them together and working together, because we've been sorely missing out on that in the last few episodes.
Yeah. And I think that I really don't have any particular issue with Grace this week. I guess she might be sort of naive at times, but, like, you know, they weren't making super huge leaps, and I mean, at the end of the day, both of them totally fell into Dean Munch's plan, but I don't think they were, like, being complete dum-dums or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, by the end, was like, this is... Nope. Well, I never thought it was Feather, because, again, I'm a believer in the scenes of, like, when they discover it, that it's true. So I was like, all right, we know it's not Feather, so then as soon as Dean Munch makes it out to be Feather, I'm like, ah, Dean Munch did it. Dean Munch is evil. And
evil Munch.
And Grace
and Pete.
Well,
so, you know, it's funny you thought that, because that was not my assumption. My assumption was that he wants it to be Feather and was pushing for it to be Feather, but that I still thought it was the Red Devil at this point, because I still thought it was all Gigi's plan.
I didn't, even though Gigi put Grace onto it, I actually never thought it was Gigi's plan.
Really?
Or, like, very, very...
It was, like, very pointedly, like, go talk to Feather, and she has some things to say about Dean Munch, and then right after that, Dean Munch's husband was dead.
Let me put it this way. I never thought that it was the Red Devil, but as soon as Dean Munch was in the asylum, I was fairly convinced that it was her, and had nothing to do with the Red Devil, or with Feather. So, weirdly, seeing her there was, like...
See, I was just very... maybe it's just that... I mean, we talked about Denise being gone and people, but actually the biggest character that was missing this episode was there was no Red Devil at all.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that's happened, I'm pretty sure. And so that's interesting. Because especially, like, I was just very sure that the Red Devil had done it, because she had just said, not only I have to come up with an elaborate plan to throw people onto someone else, and then it was they were clearly thrown onto someone else, but also she said, go kill some people, so I assumed he would go kill some, you know?
Yeah. I actually did think the same thing about it being the Red Devil, and it's a good lead.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I quickly got off of that, because I was like, oh no, that's too obvious. I think that this is supposed to be a more long-term thing. Yeah. And
I guess feel like her plan ended up working out better than it should have. And yes, it's good for, like, throwing you off as far as an episode goes, but it also just feels very overly coincidental that it happened to work out that way for her at the exact moment, but I don't know.
I don't know why I was so willing to accept that at face value. I don't know. I was like, oh yeah, obviously this was just supposed to be a coincidence. Dean Munch is devious. And then in the end, I was like, it really was right. That scene was amazing.
So bringing back to Grace and Pete, I think it's interesting that they were once again stopped in the middle of making out, and I do wonder if there is some sort of virgin thing going on here. I don't know, you know.
I hope not.
Yeah, it just seems like very specific. Like, now we're so far in, you know. Because, like, I actually, when that scene started, I actually thought, oh, this is the scene where they're actually going to have sex, so it's not the usual thing, you know. And then they didn't, and so I was like, oh, maybe they're going for something here, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if at the end they end up flipping it on its head, but I do think that they're trying to keep her a virgin for a significant period of time.
Well, in any case, I think they're doing it very smoothly.
Yeah.
So I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Pete, with his Matthew McConaughey impression again.
Yeah.
Makes all the ladies named Grace, who are in this show, swoon.
Yeah, it's interesting. I there was nothing bad about Pete in this episode, but I did sort of maybe want a little bit, like, I feel like he's sort of still the same, like, he hasn't been developed a whole lot from who he was in episode two.
Yeah,
really.
You're right about that. Even to the point where, once again, he breaks glass.
Oh, but I thought that was actually really funny.
That was great, but I was like, no, he really hasn't changed.
But I did actually. I really thought that was a great callback, because I actually really loved that joke the first time, and it's been in significant period. Like, if they were doing this like every couple episodes or something, then that would be an issue. But it's been like a long time since that joke.
It was
enough
a good
so that some people might have forgotten it. And yeah, I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah. Either way, it was a good callback. Even if you didn't remember it, it was still funny. And if you do, it's like, silly Pete.
And as in addition to that, break-in scene, I thought that what was interesting is they very pointedly have him be faint at the sight of blood. So now, do you think that is a clue that he is not a devil, or is it a red herring? You know?
I don't know, but I was thinking about that. Because didn't Grace give him kind of a look?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, huh, Grace caught on to that, too.
Yeah.
But is he just saying that? Is it true? I don't know, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
I don't think
he is one of them.
I hope he is not. I think that would be dumb.
Yeah.
He
really needs to be more important as a character.
Yeah.
So does Grace, arguably, but...
Yeah. But she did pretty solidly this week, so I was mostly happy. I do think it's interesting how much Silence of the Lambs references we get in this show with the, she outright calls her Clarice and to the quid pro quo and all that stuff with when they visit Dean Monk.
I caught on that too.
Yeah.
And I really like the references in this. I like how that's a follow through in the series, but this episode was very referential in other ways as well. They all are. I don't know why I'm still so surprised by that. It's clearly... The show's freaking called Scream Queens. It's...
Yeah. I do actually... In general, we don't have as vast a horror knowledge as I wish we did working on, you know, doing this podcast. So if people notice, like, specific call-outs or whatever, that would be a great thing to tweet at us so that we can, you know, do research or whatever and know what they're referencing, because I think it's very possible that some of the things that we point out as being weird or stupid could just be us missing a reference, you know?
Yeah. So. Even with cinematic techniques as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's really all I have to say about Grace and Pete.
Yeah, just solid and chipper as always.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm interested in the woman who paints everyone.
Yeah, oh, so... Was it just me, or did you also assume that we're eventually going to have them find out Gigi's bad by her having painted Gigi?
I did not think of that.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. But I kind of hope that... I actually thought that was a reference to something that I didn't know about.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm trying to remember... Do we know for sure that Gigi has been institutionalized, or do we just assume that she's been institutionalized?
I think we just assumed it, but we don't know.
Because we do know that one of the girls from 95 ended up being institutionalized, but we don't know that that girl was Gigi.
We think it's her because of her addiction to the 90s.
Yeah, and her general craziness.
Yeah, I mean, and in this episode she was like, I'm touched, but not like in the head.
Yeah, and the whole, like, hag on Katie Lane thing.
Oh yeah, that cry laughter.
Remember when that was like a big end of an episode, and now they like haven't talked about it for like a really long time.
I know. We were freaking out over it.
Yeah.
At least I was. I don't remember. I don't remember that long ago. I barely remember what I ate for breakfast. Did I eat breakfast today?
I didn't.
Neither did I.
But anyway, I do feel like, at minimum, that was foreshadowing of someone being revealed that they were at an institution, and, you know, that's going to come back, I think.
Right. I thought that was mostly just either a reference to a movie or her. I see her coming back in a supernatural way of, like, them visiting Feather, and then this woman giving them another portrait that magically somehow points them in another direction. But I think it makes way more sense that Gigi was there once upon a time and they get a portrait of Gigi.
Well, I have more to say about this, but we'll get to Feather first.
Okay, I have a lot to say about Feather.
Okay.
A lot. Okay, so Feather was played by Tavi Gevinson. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Can I actually talk about Tavi Gevinson before you get into your Feather?
Gevinson. I was like, oh man, I wrote it down. I was like, did I really mess up how to write down my name?
Gevinson. Okay, yeah. Do you know her from anything? I guess I'll ask.
I looked into her.
Yeah.
I didn't know her from it, but I looked into her now and was really impressed. I was surprised I hadn't heard of her before.
Mm.
So do you know?
Yes. Oh yeah. I thought there was more to that. Yeah, no. I have seen her before in the movie Enough Said with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I always forget her name. And James Gandolfini. It's a romantic comedy, and she's in it, like, in a small role, but I do remember liking her in that movie. So, and that's a fun movie, so I recommend that movie if people want to see it.
What I was going to say about her, what I found out, is that she started off as, like, a fashion blogger.
Oh,
and then she decided to instead of, like, start a magazine that turned into this, like, teen magazine inspiring young women. And it's very much in line with, like, feminism and, like, achieving. And it has a bunch of, like, really famous people in the industry. Like, I think I remember seeing, like, John Hamm has written for it. And that it has a lot of contributors from the industry. And it's very much about, like, feminism and empowering young girls.
Interesting.
Young women. And she's only 19.
Oh, wow.
She's only 19, which is gross when you think about her making out with Professor Munch or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's actually, like, she's been on, I think it was Forbes, like, 30 under 30 or something.
Yeah.
Something. So she's done a lot of work outside of acting.
Yeah.
For years.
Interesting. Yeah, see, I just looked her up on IMDb, so I didn't see all that, but that's interesting.
Well, okay, so this is what I actually want to say.
Yeah.
Like, that I really want to say about, not so much Tavi as about Feather.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I noticed when we saw Feather was that she looks a lot like Mia Farrow from Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
For those who have seen it. So specifically her very... her short haircut, her blonde hair, her very, like, pixie-like features, you know. So I was like, okay, there's a big resemblance here to Mia Farrow. And then as the episode went on, I discovered that so much of this story is inspired specifically by Mia Farrow's life. So a day ago, I was listening to a podcast called You Must Remember This, and this episode specifically called Mia Farrow in the 1960s, Part 2, Mia and Dory. And basically what this episode is about is that Mia Farrow, among her career, part of this episode addresses her personal life in the late 1960s. So Mia Farrow began an affair with a man named Andre Previn. And there was a huge age difference between them, like almost 20 years, I think. And Andre Previn, he's a composer and musician, and he was married at the time to a singer-songwriter named Dory Previn. Mia Farrow alleges he was, like, separated, but whatever, he was still married to Dory. So it turns out that Dory Previn was eventually diagnosed as a schizophrenic. She struggled with pill addiction, and in 1969, she was institutionalized after having a breakdown. And she had this breakdown on a plane. She was trying to fly to London to save her marriage after learning of Mia Farrow's pregnancy with her husband's, like, with her husband. So that actually makes me think, A, what if it turns out that Feather is going to be pregnant.
Now, according to IMDb, she's only in this episode.
But we thought Caulfield and Roger and Dodger were only going to be in those in their own episodes. They weren't listed as in future episodes.
Is that true? Okay. Yes. Well, yeah. So it's very possible she'll be back. But I just wanted to throw that out there in case that is accurate. I don't see why she would be pregnant and what that would possibly add to the story. And it could, especially honestly, this whole Dean Munch thing is That's why I don't really blame people for saying this is a filler episode. This is a side plot. This is the mayor and MTV Scream. You know, it's not... It doesn't really matter. I don't necessarily... I need to come back to her, but...
All right, fair enough. Just another thing tying Mia Farrow together to this episode is the fact that... So, Professor Munch, he taught a class on the Beatles.
Mm.
And the song Dear Prudence is named after Mia Farrow's sister, Prudence. She was the inspiration for that song.
Mm.
So I'm like, ah, Beatles connection.
Aww.
And then lastly, the most important thing, going back to Dori Previn, she, in 1970, after being released from the institution, she'd been in multiple over the course of her life, but after this specific time... She released an album with a song called Beware of Young Girls, and that's the song that played at the very end.
Yeah.
And that song was about Pharaoh, about, you know, a younger woman coming in and trying to steal her husband.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest hint that Feather is supposed to be Mia Pharaoh beyond just her appearance.
Mm. Interesting. It's very interesting. And I do wonder how many potentially maybe older viewers immediately got these references and how much of an Easter egg versus how much of a most people are supposed to catch this type of thing it is. I definitely did not catch any of this.
I wouldn't have known this if I hadn't listened to that podcast. I don't remember if it was yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah, that's really
literally cool. By chance I listened to this podcast at this time. There is one more thing. So in her autobiography, Dori Previn writes that when she was institutionalized that time in 1969, she multiple times tried to escape by flushing herself down a toilet. And when we see Feather in her cell at the end, there's a very visible toilet right there.
Nice.
And I'm thinking the show might be ridiculous enough.
To actually have her escape.
To actually have her somehow escape through, like, if not her toilet, like the sewage system. I'm just saying, I wouldn't put it past the show.
Well,
in terms
I'm also
of references.
Interested in that. Is that supposed to be the same? Like when Dean Munch was at that asylum, was he supposed to be in that same thing that we see Feather at in the end?
Mm. Do they think that Feather is the Red Devil too?
Oh yeah, they do, because that's the whole idea. Is that what's his name? Clump, or I'm going to look it up. But the
Chisholm.
Chisholm, there you go. Clump. I keep wanting to call him Clump. Detective Clump.
He is kind of clumpy.
Detective Chisholm is just like, the statistics of this gruesome murder and another crazy psycho being on the same time is just outrageous.
Not that I've done the math. It's like, oh god, you suck so hard. I was willing to give you the benefit of the doubt until this episode. That's seriously it. They really made him incompetent this episode.
But I actually thought he was really funny. I enjoyed his deliveries.
The delivery of the lines was fine. I was just annoyed it was happening.
Yeah, but, I mean, we already knew that he was terrible at his job throughout this, so at least now there's a character that's funny behind it, in my opinion.
I didn't find it funny.
Anyway, I mean, there definitely are hints here that there is some sort of bigger, parallel or reference here, because the Beatles thing is so specific, you know, that I wouldn't be surprised if it does send people going and looking online and be like, what exactly is this? What's happening here? I guess I haven't said yet, but I really, really liked Feather's performance. I thought she was, like, her deliveries made this character a lot more funny and enjoyable than she could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, she definitely was a good standout guest star for me. We'll see if she comes back or not.
I hope we see her again. Also, it would make this episode more relevant.
That's true, yeah.
That's exactly it, where, man, how times have changed. I have been won over by these writers, by Ryan Murphy, overall in terms of like, oh no, this is going to be relevant. That's why I think like, yeah, she's probably going to be pregnant. Yeah, she's going to escape through a toilet. Yeah, it's all going to tie together. It's going to be perfect. It's going to, we're going to, all my questions will be solved. It'll be like the opposite of Lost.
You can't say that. You haven't even seen Lost.
I know, I was actually saying that just to get that rise out of you.
I really liked her, the whole sequence of her delivering her backstory and sort of cutting back and forth between these weird vignettes and her actually just talking to Grace and Pete. And I specifically really liked the line about, like, I mean, he wasn't really attractive at all, but I mean, he was the Beatles professor. So.
That was great. That was like, that's what so many people say about the Beatles themselves.
Oh my God. So funny. The one question I had was, I didn't feel like, when they do a usual storyline about a professor dating a student, usually part of what comes up from that is that the professor gets fired.
I don't think he worked at the university anymore. Seem like it.
But then he moved into Capitale. And they never once said he was fired, as far as I remember. Unless they've mentioned it in, like, a previous episode, I forgot.
No, I don't think so.
So...
I just assumed...
Yeah,
that he
wouldn't
stay at the at the university where his ex-wife is in charge.
I actually know two people that like had this exact situation happen. You know, at my school, I think like a 20-year-old and like a 60-year-old. Now they live together. It's very disturbing. he did get fired. So
yeah, I imagine that. Oh, God, watching Dean Munch in her creepy way arrive. That Kappa scene where it's like, how did you, what was the thing on the, a pink M&M that said, KK, you know, Kappa,
what,
Kappa.
What made you feel like a woman or something like
yeah,
that?
Like, yeah, like, what did you learn about being a woman today? And he was about to answer. I enjoyed that sequence immensely.
Should we talk about I guess this is connecting with Dean Munch too, so if you want to save it for that, but just the whole Bologna aspect. And what did you think about all that?
It was a stretch.
Yeah.
But it was clever.
I thought that the scene where she was saying it a lot was funny and was appropriately annoying for what they were aiming for. The one part that I thought was sort of interesting is Dean Munch says the line that, like, he had the Bologna idea ages ago. And so it cuts to this whole flashback, and she tells her to start a blog in that scene, right? At this point, I don't think she's supposed to have been sleeping with him yet.
Right? That's what I was so confused about, too. Like, why would you encourage her to start this blog if you have no motive for it?
Was this some sort of weird plot hole, or was Dean Munch just such a crazy psycho that he would kill someone for being annoying and saying Bologna?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
otherwise, I think she would have killed her sooner.
Yeah, it seems strange. Unless, like, because the other thing I was going to say, so, like, at the end of that scene, she mentions her husband and how lucky she is or whatever, right? But that was after she had mentioned the blog idea. So, unless it's just like, oh, sometimes I kill people and I was, like, setting this up in case I wanted to kill her. It's like,
that actually didn't make any sense to me. I thought it was just her being like, oh, this girl is so stupid. I'm going to tell her I can count it as credits and then I'm not going to let her because it turns out to be.
Yeah, but it's the fact that they set it up with, I had the idea for this, you know.
Yeah, that didn't make so much sense. That's one of the things I didn't like about it, and I was like, this undermines the brilliance.
Yeah.
Not brilliance, but, you know, the logic behind
brilliance.
This.
Yeah, I mean, but if you really, like, the second time I watched the scene with her, with the Dean and Grace and Pete, I was like, she completely plays that entire thing. It goes exactly her way with, like, the guy comes over with the meat at the right time, and she specifically says in front of them that I'm not able to eat this kind of meat, and, you know, like...
Can I tell you, as soon as that happened, when I tell you that I was like, oh, no, maybe it was still... That's as soon as I saw her
saying that,
I was like, this is going to play a part.
Yeah.
And... We are expected to, I don't want to say that, oh, this show's so predictable, but I was like, they are too good sometimes about making things connect.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely knew that it was, that you should be paying attention to this for a reason and that it was going to be important, but I didn't necessarily know that he was saying that at that moment purposely for their benefit.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't...
Yeah. Oh, no, neither did I, but yeah. I was just like, well, I think that her bologna allergy is...
Yeah, I definitely thought the allergy would come up with some sort of evidence in some way. I just didn't think... that she, I just thought that he was saying it organically and not as setting them up, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. I was disappointed, actually, in Pete and Grace, now that I think about it, about how quickly they bought into it being Feather.
Yeah.
After it being revealed, like, oh, but there was a bologna sandwich.
But nobody ever came up with a motive for Feather.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly.
Yeah.
But we didn't actually talk that much about the scene of finding his head and finding the different body. Like, did you have anything else you want to say about that? Or
It was unbelievable that she would keep going.
Yeah.
Is that ketchup?
It was a cool scene, though, despite the lack of believability.
Right, right. I didn't really mind it. It was just ridiculous. Yeah. Honey, I got your Metamucil.
Now, there's also this whole ridiculousness of her putting off telling Grace about the baby for a week.
Dean Munches now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, that was such bullshit, but I think it's supposed to be like in real time. This show's in real time. That we watch the show in a week. She tells Grace a week later.
See you next Tuesday.
Right.
I do like that we have this aspect of her having actually killed people. It makes her much more interesting to me. Also, that she isn't a red devil necessarily, but she is a killer. It makes it so that maybe there actually will be some sort of fallout to her being mad about Gigi and Wes. And, you know, I think that probably will lead somewhere. And then she'll realize that Gigi is more than she thought she was. And...
do you want her to be caught by the end?
Dean Munch?
Yeah.
I don't really care about morals on this show, so... nah. I don't care either way. If she is, she is. Like, but
it's tricky.
Not like the show is necessarily giving me, like, lessons about good and evil.
No. But this is actually hard for me to decide, because I want Feather to be relevant again, but I don't want Dean Munch... to potentially be limited to this season.
Yeah, I wonder what... I mean, honestly, I'm also just wondering if we're getting a season 2. So we'll see. But it would be nice to see more of Jamie Lee Curtis.
I don't know why in my mind I think that season 2 is like, no matter what their ratings, it's a definite.
I feel like we could get a season 2. I don't know. I definitely don't think season 3 will be a definite. But
no, I'm not. I don't think that far. I think that they're banking a lot on bingeability.
Bingeability.
There needs to be a better word for that. But basically, I think they might risk paying for a second season just to see if viewership will go up after season 1 goes on like Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu or something.
And one thing about this show is that it's easy to repackage in season 2 and try to sell it differently because it's going to be a whole sort of different story, right? So if people didn't like certain aspects of season 1, you sort of market it in a different fashion, say it's not the same tone necessarily, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so I think there's definite seeds being planted for season 2, and I hope Jamie Lee Curtis is in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Do you want Grace back?
Jury's out on that one.
Yeah. All right, so if you want to contact us and to get your thoughts read on the podcast, there's a few different ways you can do it. You can either email us at thescreamcast@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet at ScreamPod on Twitter. Or you can go on our website, thescreamcast.wordpress.com. There's a little contact us thing right there. Also, it would be really great and helpful if you could subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us or review us on iTunes, and that would just help us be found more in the ratings and found more on iTunes, and then we'll connect with more of the community. It'll be a happy time for all.
Yeah, we'd really love a review, even if you don't have the time to write something out, just, you know, 5 stars, click, submit, that's all you got to do, and it would make our day.
Woo! Shall we begin the tweeting process?
Let us begin the tweets. So, from Woosh Danny H, he says, really wacky episode, too scared to even say the C2 quotes, Chanel 2 quotes. We got a clue from the GG phone call, the two helping devils are guys.
Yeah, we talked a little about this already with the whole, like, does the guys mean anything? I don't know. I'm still semi-inclined. Well, there just aren't that many guys. So,
yeah.
I feel like it's Boone and a girl. Because I just don't feel like there's enough guys. Because I don't think it's Chat, unless it's Earl Grey. It could be Earl Grey.
It could still be Earl Grey.
Yeah, it could be Boone and Earl Grey. But it's not like such a letdown at this point.
Because someone has a crush on Zayday.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Chanel number five. So.
You're right. It's not going to be Boone. So
no, I'd like to believe that Boone is, in fact, gay.
Yeah. So you're probably right. It's probably Earl Grey. But there
could be three of them.
Such a bland, like they've done nothing with his character, really, so that reveal is not going to be an exciting reveal.
It really won't, and I really don't like the idea of the two, like, the only two black characters on the show. Well, no, other than Denise. So, okay, two of the three.
The two that are able to be in a romantic pairing, anyway.
Well, excuse me, Miss Denise Hemphill was with Chad, and
yeah,
that was
okay.
A pairing. And if this episode showed us anything, age is but a number.
Yes, that was the message of this episode.
Beware young girls. Anyway. But yeah, the point is I don't like the idea of them being paired, of Earl Grey and Zayday being paired.
I mean, we can't quite wave fingers at them yet until we know, but it's just very much leaning that way.
I just hope it's not that, because Ryan Murphy has a bad track record with...
I mean, the only other person it can be is Pete, right? It's not going to be Chad.
Could be Pete.
I guess it could be
Pete. I wouldn't put it past it.
But he hasn't even interacted with Zayday. Has he? He had, like, one line, maybe?
Love from afar, using grace to get close to Zayday. I don't know.
It is true that he had it used to be a stalker or whatever,
that's
right?
True. Something... didn't exactly address with the song Beware Young Girls. The fact that Beware Young Girls is very much something that should be done with the Chanels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just want to hit that nail over the head of them showing, after them declaring they're going to kill Zayday and Grace, this song is playing, and then we see them.
Wait, so now did they declare they would kill them, or that they would catch them as the Red Devils? I think they said they were gonna sleuth, because the whole thing they were gonna.
Oh,
Nancy.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that their plans in the end result in murder.
Well, that's fine.
In their minds. Justified murder, but murder nonetheless. They really want to murder people.
So it's really me with two E's and an H says.
It's really meh. Sorry.
Very nice. Says, although I never thought it was him, we can cross out Grace's dad, Wes, since Gigi kept her phone call to her minions from him. Yeah, I think you're pretty right there. I think Wes is pretty much off the table. They also say, we can also cross out the Dean. She is a killer, but it seems like she's just a copycat who murders for her own bidding, and she's not one of the Red Devils.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree. I don't think the Dean or Wes is on the list anymore. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that you became more suspicious of after this week?
Pete.
Really? Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just the way he reacts. Okay, here's what made me more suspicious of Pete. The way he, and I keep forgetting, I knew there was something more I wanted to say about the paint lady. Yeah. The way he reacted to her.
Yeah.
It was just weird. And again, the blood thing. I thought that was too much on purpose, maybe.
Yeah.
I thought it was too convenient.
Well, also, if they say he was working with Gigi, the fact that he was so on, like, Dean Munch is the killer, maybe that was, he was helping Gigi with the whole, like, throwing the scent off of them.
Yep.
That's possible.
It is. And... well, we didn't get to see the opening title sequence.
Yep.
But I don't know. He's the last one we see in that opening title sequence, and then he winks, and then he closes the coffin.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen enough of Pete's charm. I feel like we should be charmed even more, and then let down once we find out that he is the Red Devil, or someone doing something bad. I don't know.
Yeah. You know who I actually am less suspicious of after this episode is Hester.
Yeah.
I feel like he was trying to do some sort of plot to get Chanel, but if that's what her plot is, that's not very Red Devil-y, you know, like,
no.
So.
Well, I'm still suspicious of number five.
Yeah, me too. Just because of she's not really doing that much.
Yeah, so. And the fact that she's so reasonable and logical that she's gonna have to snap legitimately somehow, I hope.
And I do think it's very possible that all these jokes about her being a psycho could just be foreshadowing and set up for if she actually always was a psycho. But we'll see.
We'll see. I don't know. I think I say I don't know in regards to this question at the end of every episode.
Except for the pilot podcast. Where you're like, it's definitely Wes. No, you weren't. But
well, I was disappointed when we had Wes crossed off the list.
Yeah.
But now I'm glad because now it's less obvious.
Yeah.
But now it's also less logical.
It's all Denise.
All Denise. And, Denise and Clump. Actually, it's both Denise, Zayday. And I don't know.
I officially am calling that guy Clump, okay?
No. Actually, that's fine. Yeah.
He could. I mean, that would explain why he's so incompetent.
He's clumpish, that's for sure.
Oh, we didn't even talk about it. I actually did kind of like the scene where Dean Monk was arrested by him.
Yeah.
Her not believing that it was real. I thought was funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that we know that she actually did kill her ex-husband, yeah. Now I'm thinking she knew the entire time, and
yeah, so you set think it was her way. Plan to get arrested?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Because she was playing up her drinking and then falling and hurting herself so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Man, I'm so sorry to end it on that downer, but
well, if you have better theories than we do, send them into @ScreamPod on Twitter or thescreamcast.wordpress.com. Thank you guys for listening, and don't let dead people get to you.
Thanks, guys. Beware young girls.
Like Olga.